Well, did you notice it? What, you ask? Well, the psalm, the flattening of human experience into what might be considered kind of trivial. Something akin to what we do when we say to our kids, "I remember when you were a toddler, it was so great." Did you pick that up? You're still wondering, well, I'm being rude. Let me spell it out. One of the lines of our psalm says this: "They asked, and quails appeared, and you satisfied them with bread from heaven." Really? Really? Let's see, what did we just read? "The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. If only we had died," you got the appropriate quavering of the voice, "if only we had died by the hand of the Lord," you get it, "of the Lord in the land of Egypt. You have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." That doesn't sound like asking to me any more than a toddler in the throes of a tantrum screaming is asking for more ice cream. But we do that, right? We filter our memories. Indeed, psychologists and neurologists tell us it's for our very survival. If all past traumatic events or even difficult times had the same weight in our memories as more positive or recent experiences, we'd all be paralyzed with fear and anxiety, and we literally wouldn't be able to get out of our chairs or out of our beds in the morning and take that next step. And so, of course, the psalm is practicing exactly what we do, the larger perspective. From the perspective of looking back, which is when we think these psalms were edited at the time of exile, Israel sees that the Lord indeed took their bitter complaining as asking, which is instructive for us as we seek to move forward as a community. We are enabled in our collective memory, in our hope and faith, to see that God has been, and is with us. Not just in good times, but in the difficult, trying times as well. These stories, and I really, really do commit to saying this next little bit till you beg me to stop, are not just stories about the past, about the ancient roots of our faith. They are our stories. So the first thing, besides what I've already said about perspective, is that complaining isn't just human. It is, on a very profound level, necessary. We see this in toddlers, right? It is their language of development, their way of saying, either about a feeling or a situation, "There's something about this that is distressing, that is frustrating, and I need you to help me. I need you to help me fix it." As adults, especially if we have Northern European ethnic backgrounds, I can't speak for Asian or African cultures, we're expected to button up, not to complain too loudly. Indeed, we're supposed to suppress our distress, right? But the Psalms and the stories of Scripture, our prayers, our Psalms, our stories, are full of the push and pull, the yin, the yang of praise and lament, thanksgiving and complaint. Indeed, as in our first reading, complaint often follows the spectacular answer to prayer, as surely as that first major fight of a relationship will occur right after the engagement, right? Or on your honeymoon. This reality is not meant to discourage us, but to say, this is how life works. This is how development happens in life and on the spiritual path of life. And I want to say this next part, but I kind of gulp when I say this. Neither should leaders be discouraged if those they are leading complain. Indeed, any healthy community, any community that is alive, will experience those who complain. For several reasons, it's part of our normal development. And it matter. It means we get that these things matter. You know, we complain about things that matter, generally. We don't complain about things that we don't care about. We just ignore them. And I think this last one is really true. We can expect complaining in the church because the path of discipleship is not always easy, if we're honest. Often we need to experience a narrowing of options, a new unexpected reality which first of all brings the complaining to the fore, and then when we've acknowledged the unpleasantness of the situation through that action, we can become freshly aware of a new possibility that we would not have seen otherwise. But there's a catch, isn't there? We need to do this with integrity. We need to complain honestly, if you will. I know that sounds funny, but that's really what I'm trying to say. There's that word again, the honest word. It turns out that honesty is the door that opens us to growth in almost every area of our lives. Honesty about our feelings and fears in our relationships can open us to deeper connections, to renewed friendship or deeper friendship. Honesty about our skills, our strengths, and our weaknesses can redirect us or give us new energy in our work and vocation, lead to fruitful labor and purpose. And honesty in complaining can help us get to the root of our spiritual issues, our malaise, that feeling of nothing's happening. It is not Moses and Aaron, ultimately, that have led the people into the wilderness. It is God. And if and when the people direct their complaint to God, they open themselves to God's help and direction. When in our lives we complain to God, we find not only that God can handle it, but that God invites it. And so I'll just say it again. The Psalms, the original prayer book, are full of complaints and laments and praise and thanksgiving. God's Spirit seems to thrive on our honesty in praise and our honesty in lament. Honesty about our dreams, which we saw when we were looking at the life of Joseph, and honesty about the disasters, the heartache and the pain. Here, the Israelites. And in the case of the Israelites, once Moses has helped them to get honest about who they're really angry at, who their complaint really is about, which is God, the Israelites are now turned away from Moses and Aaron and they're facing God. And when they're facing God, they can see God's work in a new way. Can see that God is giving them new food. We're really not sure what to make of this food that God gives them. The quail, we get that. That seems to be a kind of one-off. But this other thing that is there every day or 6 days a week, this manna, which translated is, what is it? You know, what is it? They didn't quite get what it was, and it really is still our question, what is this? Children who come forward for Eucharist for the first time often look at their parents, I've seen this look many times, and ask about the little wafer that I'm about to hand them. What is it? They're asking their parents. What is it? And of course, the analogy to the wafers we use and the manna that Israel experienced is, of course, on purpose. Was it something natural? that the pressure of the moment helped the Israelites to see as a potential food source. Maybe it was insect grub that tasted sweet. I don't know. Could be. Some scholars think so. Indeed, often God's agency, God's action, is understood after the fact as a new release of human potential. It's the pressure of the moment, it's the hunger of the moment that opens their eyes to a possibility. I think that makes sense, but it may not have been what happened. We don't know. What matters is that the Israelites found resources in partnership with their new trying circumstances and God. And they were able to do something they wouldn't have thought possible if there had been a McDonald's every 5 miles on the trip. Of course, that is encouraging for us in our new situation as a parish as well. What are we going to be able to figure out together? What under God's Spirit are we going to be able to see that we haven't previously seen? In our gospel, it is a complaining about economic or a supposed economic injustice that opens the way for us to understand God's mission in the world in a new way. A mission in the world that is precisely about taking what seems lost, hopeless, not good enough for the regular day job, and restoring and using it, repurposing it, if you will, in a fashion so that it is now as useful as that which has always been useful. And of course, we see this ultimately with the cross. God takes an instrument of violence and repurposes it for the salvation of the world. It means, of course, that there's hope for everything and for everyone, for you and me. Perhaps we think we've missed the train in relationship to our path or our potential, or there's someone in our life that we grieve for in that respect. But in our scriptures and through these sacraments, we hear Christ's voice saying, "Come on, it's not too late, work with me. You'll find that your best before date is not yet. Engage with me and find what you might not have expected, a usefulness, a place, a home, an important part to play in the mission." But even if our honest complaining is necessary and helpful, and it is, in our second reading from Paul's letter to the Philippians, we see another possibility, another level, and I'll just touch on this briefly. I'm sure that Paul was like you and I. He was a human being, so he would have complained. He would have found his circumstances in prison as trying as you and I would have found those circumstances. But he also found that in God, on the other side of complaining, is a holy acceptance. A holy acceptance, something that God hopes and wishes for each of us. I'm certainly not where Paul was while he was writing that letter. In his soul, I long to get there because I know it's a good place. And I covet it for all of you as well. We see that it is possible, in other words, to move from reactive mode, complaining mode, to non-reactive mode, to exercising faith in whatever circumstance we find ourselves, to find peace and love and joy in even difficult things. This too is part of what is called the great reversal. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Referring, of course, to people, but also to the ways that God works in us. It is possible and wonderful to move beyond the ways we learned while we were toddlers. Necessary ways. Our normal ways of being. The good news this morning is that the Spirit can open to us new spiritual resources that we didn't know were there. We can learn, as Paul did, that God is truly in this place, in this moment. Paul says, but with God, even if I die, I gain. Life versus even more life, we can't lose. It's extraordinary. In dire circumstances, in ordinary life, arriving late to the party or arriving late to life, in complaint and in beautiful acceptance, God is working for us, for this community. Now, if that sinks into your bones, you're going to pray the Lord's Prayer in a different way. Give us today our daily bread. You'll add in there your complaining, your praising, your acceptance, your serene moments. It can all be part of that asking. And the bread that God gives, it will sustain you. We really can't lose. Amen.